Source. The Taiyi's Colleen Kimmett joins me over the phone to talk about some of the most recently published articles from the Independent Online magazine. So first of all, thanks for joining us, Colleen.
You're welcome.
To start things off, oil and its significance continue to resonate across the globe. And last week, we were talking about the impacts of what Canadians were feeling in terms of the spill in, off the Gulf Coast. And recently, the Taiyi published an article that highlights ongoing concerns expressed by British Columbians regarding the transportation of crude oil in British Columbia. So can you tell us a little bit about what this article is talking about in terms of the flow of oil, of crude oil from the Alberta tar sands through British Columbia?
Sure. Mitchell Anderson reported last week how tanker traffic on the BC coast is quietly being scaled up with virtually no public engagement process, outdated regulations, and no federal oversight. The number of oil tankers already coming to BC coast are up nearly 50% in just 2 years. Now, this is coming out of a terminal in the Burrard Inlet, Westridge Terminal. Last year, about 3.9 million tons of Alberta crude oil was exported through this terminal, filling 65 oil tankers, so that's 20 more than in 2008. The pipeline is owned by Kinder Morgan, and it extends all the way from Haynes, Alberta, to North Burnaby. Its capacity is currently 300,000 barrels per day. That's almost 60% of the proposed volume of the Enbridge Northern Gateway pipeline in northern BC. And Kinder Morgan has plans to more than double that capacity to 700,000 barrels per day.
And so what does that mean for British Columbians? What is having all that traffic going through the province? What are the impacts of that?
Well, Anderson interviewed marine spill expert Stafford Reed, who believes that this increased oil tanker traffic could, in fact, be more dangerous than the very contentious pipeline project and port expansion that the Northern Gateway project would bring. He believes that oil spill risks increase not with the number of shipments rather than the size of tankers. And because the Burnaby Terminal and Burrard Inlet can't handle larger vessels, more oil means more tanker traffic.
Right, and so it's kind of, I guess, another one of those troubling issues in terms of getting, it's something that we obviously can't avoid, and so it's a matter of making sure that voices are being heard in terms of both sides of the debate, and I think that this article highlights a lot of the important issues going on in British Columbia. It's one of those issues that the Taiyi is always engaging with in terms of what's happening in Canada in terms of the energy sector, and one of the series that we have been focusing on that the Taiyi is really taking great strides on is the Clean Tech series, and we were talking last week about smart grids and a few weeks before that as well. And Andrew McLeod engaged recently in geothermal energy in this Clean Tech series. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about how geothermal fits into the Clean Tech series and how it compares to smart grids. And maybe you can just tell us a little bit about what geothermal systems are and why they're increasing in popularity.
Sure. Geothermal technology is also known as geoexchange. So wherever you live, the temperature a few meters below the surface of the ground remains the same year-round. And in winter, that heat that remains in the ground can be pulled up into a building. And in summer, the system can be reversed to cool the building by pumping heat back into the earth. So the system itself kind of works like a refrigerator with heat pumps and heat exchange technology and holes drilled down into the ground to either dump heat into the ground or pull heat up from the ground. And McLeod interviewed Barry Milner of Geotility, which is a well-established firm doing these kinds of systems in buildings. And he says for every unit of energy they use, they provide 4 to 5 units of heat. So that's incredible efficiency. And that means that we're reducing our carbon footprint because, you know, you don't necessarily have to rely on a gas furnace if you have a system like this, and in improving air quality, decreasing our dependence on fossil fuels.
And so do you think that it could be safe to say that geothermal is especially important in British Columbia because you're able to kind of implement it into existing buildings because, you know, we're a city with a lot of old buildings that are really not very successful in their carbon emissions. And so is that something that's kind of taking hold because of the infrastructure in British Columbia?
Well, I think that it's definitely a bonus. I mean, typically installing systems like this in an existing building is extremely cost prohibitive. The one project that Geotility is working on is the Hotel Georgia in downtown Vancouver that's been renovating anyway. And Geotility basically created kind of a small portable type of drilling platform that allowed them to retrofit the hotel with one of these systems. And I think Vancouver is especially ideal for geothermal or geoexchange because we do have a moderate climate. So it doesn't get really hot in the summer and it doesn't get really cold in the winter, which means theoretically a geoexchange system could completely cover your heating and cooling costs here, whereas in a colder climate or a hotter climate, you might need additional heating or air conditioning.
So jumping off from that really innovative project that really does affect a lot of Vancouverites, I want to jump to a story that affects really me personally and something I'm actually kind of really excited about. So I'm a student and I'm busy. And in other words, that means that I'm prone to leave my essays to the last minute. I'm excited. Can you tell me a little bit about what's any hope for me out there? Like what can a new system that can help me procrastinate even more, I guess?
Yes. BC Books Online is an e-book collection that was released this May 12, 2010. This is a database, a digital collection of BC-published nonfiction books. It's a one-of-a-kind database. It's got a copy and paste function. It allows readers to download portions of books. It's got digital volumes that can be highlighted on screen, bookmarked, and printed. It means that if you are, you know, doing a last-minute rush to finish that essay, it's late, the library's closed, you can still find the book you need online. And it's the result of an effort by a consortium of organizations and publishers. It's been 3 years in the making. And it's really kind of exciting, I think. It's focusing on BC history, Aboriginal culture, political commentary, arts and culture, biography, autobiography, the environment, and urban issues.
And so I think one of the highlights for me, one of the things that I really took out of it was that more than one person is able to, so to say, download or take out one of these books at a time, whereas the BC Library system the Vancouver Public Library, to my understanding, only one person can have that electronic version at a time. Do you think that this is something that more libraries will move towards in the future and having more e-books?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think so. And I think publishers are recognizing this. They're beginning to revisit their contracts with authors to acquire electronic rights so that if that book does, if it could be collected, it could be more easily collected in an e-book collection. So I think it's something that, libraries are recognizing, publishers are recognizing. I was reading an article about a big booksellers fair in New York City, and the author was saying that e-books were high on the agenda there.
And obviously very important in terms of those who are following the new iPhone, because the new iPhone 4 will have the iBook capability where they connect instantly to that whole system. But speaking about publishing and a matter of getting stories out there, we really do love having this partnership with the TAI, but maybe you could tell us a little bit about how the TAI is operating and what's going on right now.
Yeah, well, we're about halfway through a fundraising drive for the TAI Reporting Fellowship Funds. So these fellowships are focused on investigative and solutions-oriented journalism. We give out four fellowships a year worth $5,000. And I can tell you as a journalist, I mean, to be given a chunk of money to basically fund a good chunk of time to really dig into a subject is so important. And, we've funded a series in the past that have been quite groundbreaking. Chris Wood did an investigative series on how global warming will hit BC. We published a really popular solution series by writer Dave Olson on basically making the argument for free public transit. So, yeah, we're about halfway through this funding drive. We're looking to raise $10,000, and anything you can contribute, you know, $5, $10, $20, it's very much welcome. So you can find more information on the tie.ca.
Well, thanks so much again, Colleen, for speaking with us. We really do appreciate having these collaborations. And I do urge our listeners to be able to go out to the tie.ca to check out what's happening there and maybe catch some of these stories and learn more about what's going on. Again, thanks, Colleen, for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
That was Colleen Kimmett from the tie.ca.